Are you a farmer or butcher ready to master direct-to-consumer marketing and meet success? Then you're in the right place. I'm Jared Aachen, the founder of Chop Local. Each episode of this podcast features interviews with farmers and butchers who have built successful direct-to-consumer meat businesses, and they're going to share their secrets for success with you. From actionable tips to inspiring stories, this podcast has ingredients you will need to succeed in the meat business. After the show, be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and follow us on social. And check out the rest of our educational resources at choplocaluniversity.com. Now, let's turn it over to my business partner, Katie, to get started.
Okay, welcome everybody to another episode of our podcast. I'm Katie Althoff. I'm one of the co-founders of Chop Local and Chop Local University. And I'm really, really excited to be here today with Candace from White Barn Beef. Candace, thank you so much for agreeing to be one of the first guests on our podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking me.
So, Candace, you and your husband, Jason, raise alfalfa and corn, which maybe isn't that unusual. But I think it's really, really interesting that you are raising alfalfa and corn to feed your cattle in the desert, right?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about where you guys are located and a little bit more about your farm.
Okay, great. So we are located in Portal, Arizona. So we're in the southeast corner of Arizona, tucked in right next to New Mexico. We are very unique out here in the desert. When Jason got started farming, I want to say like 22 years ago, he moved out and kind of got started with his granddad in a different location. But he told me, he's like, I've always wanted to combine the farm and cattle, but everybody always told him, you can't do that. That's impossible. So I think it set him on an extra mission to prove that he could do it. So we've had quite a farming journey. We both come from generational farm families. And we got married almost 21 years ago in January. We'll celebrate our 21st wedding anniversary. And he was already farming when we got married. So I just, jumped right in. I was a farm kid myself, so it wasn't a big jump. But we grew lots of green and red chili, some corn, beans, pumpkins, and then we got into the alfalfa. And then in 2011, we moved over here to where we're at now, over here on the Arizona-New Mexico side. And it was already set up for cattle. And so super excited about the opportunity for that. And so how we got into the cattle side of the operation in the fall, we'd buy cattle after we were done harvesting. And we would, graze the cotton, the chili fields, some of the pumpkin, just some of the residue. And we'd grow some winter grass. And then we'd feed them all winter long, and then we'd sell them in the spring. And then we get to farming again. So kind of the cattle were just during the winter and the farming was during the spring and summer and fall. And, we'd sell a couple grass-fed beeves here and there. Like maybe if we sold five, it was a big year on the cattle, on the beef side. And then slowly as labor costs just got just so high, because with the green and red chilies, all hand labor, you've got to have a crew come in and hoe the fields and pick the chili. Like and it's a really high risk crop. We had some disease come in and set in, and it was just like, this is just not worth the risk anymore. And Jason said, I have a dream one day we'll walk off all our farm product in cattle trucks on hooves. And I'm like, well, that's a big dream, but that's exactly where we're at today. And so now we've got cattle on feed. We started building feed pens, and that is actually the bigger part of our business. And so we sell a little bit of hay, but mostly everything we grow, we custom feed cattle, and then we also feed our own cattle. And then that opened us up into the direct-to-consumer beef business that we're in now.
So interesting, because I'm here in the Midwest. We do a lot of, like you said, walking off the feed products or walking off the farm products as cattle, and having a small feed yard where you can feed cattle the corn that you're raising in the Midwest allows you to really take advantage of whichever market is doing better, right? You can sell the corn or you can fill it with cattle. But when I think of the Southwest, I think a lot more of, grazing lands, huge ranches, not necessarily, these row crops or the alfalfa like you're raising. Now, from what I read, you are in kind of a little valley that is maybe gets a little bit more moisture than some of the surrounding areas. Is that right?
Not the last 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's been really dry the last 2 years. We're definitely the high desert. We sit about like 4,200 feet, so we catch a little bit more rain and we're much cooler. Like people think Arizona, they think extreme hot, like Phoenix and Tucson. We can run 10 to 15 degrees cooler on average.
How far are you from the Mexico border? I mean, you're very far south.
60 miles, yeah. The Mexico border is about an hour south of us, 60 miles.
So we're recording this right now, right around the first of the year, we'll say it's winter. So what is the weather like there now?
Right now, it's a little bit overcast and cool, but it's been hot. It's been in the 70s and the lows and in the high 30s and dry. Like we're just hoping for some, praying for some rain.
And so then you irrigate your crops.
Yes, and I think that's why everybody said you can't do that out here because you're irrigating your crops. And so we lease some ranches, and so we run like our mama cows and everything and bulls out on the ranches, and then we bring our personal calves in when it's time to wean them, and then they get put on our feeding program. We've got the ranches and the farm, and the feedlot is kind of the three big entities that work together.
Got it. And custom feeding is really popular here too in the Midwest. But for listeners who don't know what that means, basically that means that you have the feed yard, you have the inputs probably, or you're buying the inputs, the grain, whatever you're feeding them with, but you don't necessarily own the cattle. Those are owned by a different farmer or rancher, and they are paying you to finish out their cattle. But you don't own them, which reduces the risk for you. It reduces the financial inputs that you have to put in because you're not buying those feeder cattle. Maybe you do the marketing, but in some situations, the custom feeder will do the marketing, and sometimes the owner will.
Right. And mostly we're more of a background yard. So we get in a lot of fresh sale barn cattle, a lot of cattle fresh off the ranches, get them going, get them straight. You know, they're here for 90, maybe 120 days. But as we are finishing more and more of our own cattle, we do have some customers that are finishing because there's no finishing yards close. You know, we are literally out in the middle of nowhere. We're far away from everything. But we are close to the Mexican border. So people are catching on to that because we, minus screw worms, where they're not shipping crossing cattle right now. But you know, I mean, there's cattle trucks up and down the main highway that goes past us all the time. And so we're starting to get some more and more of the feeding the Mexican cattle too. That's kind of opening a door to us because we're only 60 miles from one of the ports of entry where they cross cattle.
So interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so you're doing the custom feeding, you're raising the alfalfa, you're still raising some corn also.
Yeah, this year we didn't because the price was so low, so it was more economical to buy it all.
I'm just curious, and maybe you don't know, but do you know what your yields are like per acre down there for corn?
Oh man, I should know that.
That's a Jason question, maybe. Okay.
It is, yeah. At one point I could tell you all of that, but now
I completely understand because you are incredibly busy with the direct-to-consumer beef business. So let's talk a little bit more about that. You said you have your herd of mama cows, and those are the ones that you guys finish out and sell direct to consumer. You're not selling the imported cattle or the sale barn cattle. These are the ones that you are raising start to finish, right?
that's correct.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about, you said back in the day selling 5 head a year was like a big year. So how did you go from that to kind of where you are today?
Yeah, well, that, you know, in 2020 we had a little pandemic hit called COVID. And we hadn't been doing the direct to consumer very much, but in the fall, well, November 2019, there was one of the sale barn managers calls Jason and says, "I've got 3 loads of very even black heifers." And he's like, I can't get anybody to buy them. And so he asked Jason, "Are you interested?" And we'll take them because that was kind of our deal. We bought those in November, and then by February, we had 2 loads sold of those heifers. You know, we fed them up a little bit and sold them as replacement heifers, but we still had 60 head left, and COVID hit, and the market disappeared completely. And so Jason said, I don't want to give these heifers away. They're super even, just a really pretty set of Black Angus heifers." And then with that, keep that in mind. And then back to COVID, with the shutdowns and people can't get food and other things, I'm like, well, I've got freezers full of beef. So I just started putting out there on Facebook that I had beef. And so we just kind of started making deliveries into Tucson. I was just taking orders at I had a newborn. Ethan was also born the end of November of 2019. So I had a newborn that I was up at night nursing him and answering Facebook messages. It was crazy. And so in May of 2020, Jason said, what about a Wagyu bull? I'm like, what's a Wagyu? And he specifically said Akushi. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about, Akushi? So he's like, let me show you. So we jumped online and looked at him. And I'm like, I absolutely get one coming this way. And he's like, are you sure? And usually I'm the one pulling the reins back. And Jason's like, no, let's go. And I'm like, yes, because I had been selling enough at that point. Like, I want consistency. You could take two calves off the same ranch, be raised the same, fed the same. One would be prime and one would be select, you know? And it was just all the genetics. And I'm like, what can we do economically to help level the playing field with our genetics so I get more consistent beef on my end? And so he's like, well, let's take a chance. So we went ahead and bought an Akushi bull out of Texas, and he showed up, and we put him in the heifers. They were in a dry lot here at the feedlot, and we preg tested him probably within 45, 50 days. There were 60 head, one bull. They were all bred. It was just phenomenal. So that was the start of our American Wagyu, is what that's called. So the cow, we run the Angus Charolais cows, and we've got the Wagyu bulls. But, you know, that was middle of 2020, and you've got another 18, 20 months before you actually see what you've got. And so once that rolled around and then we could see what we were getting, I'm like, oh yeah, there's no going back. So that's all the bulls now are Wagyu, either black Wagyu or Akushi. The red Wagyu is our favorite.
That's so cool. So you started just by, like you said, Facebook messages, right? And at that point, were people buying like a quarter of beef or half a beef from you, or were they wanting the individual retail cuts?
No, really, at that point, they were just wanting the individual retail cuts. People were so scared. They were just, you know, everybody was in a panic. And so I did that all of 2020. And it was all just through phone calls, text messages, Facebook Messenger. And then we were just making like once a month deliveries to Tucson, which Tucson, yeah, it's 2.5 hour drive for us. Granted, with a newborn baby, you know, under a year old doing all this. And so by the time, end of 2020, I'm like, I'm exhausted. I don't want to talk to anybody. And so 2021, I laid pretty low. And I really didn't sell much beef. And at the end of 2021, I got a phone call, cold call, from another e-commerce company. And they said, hey, we've been watching you, and we think you might be interested. I'd never even heard of them. I was like, well, okay. So I got on a phone call with them, and I'm like, yeah. So that was my introduction to an e-commerce store online platform. And so then in 2022, set that up, and I was still just doing deliveries once a month.
You weren't doing any farmers markets yet.
No farmers markets, just delivery. And my sales skyrocketed. It was just like, oh my goodness. And it required less from me, less time talking to people, you know, set up. They knew where it was going to be at, times a day. They could it was all pre-order. Still a lot of work, but as far as packing the beef and stuff, but as far as just the direct contact and actually the time talking to each individual person, that went way, way down. And my sales went way up. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And then in 23, the end of 22, we bought an enclosed trailer. I call it my beef wagon. And we put our logo, we put our family picture, and we just decked the whole thing out. And I've got three freezers in it now. And April of 23, we started hitting farmers markets. And I was going twice, one in Sierra Vista, and one in Tucson once a month. And that increased my sales considerably too when I started actually showing up and being out there amongst the public. People were still using the online platform to pre-order, especially those that were familiar. But then you just catch a lot of people that are just at the farmers markets. And then sometime in 23, I saw a Chop Local University webinar. And what was it on? I can't remember.
I don't know which one the first one was that you watched. I know in summer of 23, we did one about farmers market sales. So it might have been that.
It may have been that.
could have also been our shipping webinars, obviously super, super popular. And you weren't shipping before you started with ChopLocal, right?
Right. Yeah. And that was the hole in the platform I was using, is they did not offer any kind of shipping. And I had more and more people ask me, like, do you ship beef? So then you had a Facebook ad or something. And so for a free university type class. So I took it and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And then when you reached out, you're like, well, you know, you want to do a call? I'm like, okay. And because it's a lot of work to set up a store, and you know, it takes time. It's work on the front end, but it pays off at the back end of it. But I'm like, okay. And then we had that incredible opportunity for a commercial during the NFR. I'm like, hey, can we do this like in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I remember that.
you and poor Sydney.
Candace had reached out. I think we were talking in the fall. I don't remember exactly when it was, but we talked in the fall of 2023. And I think it was mid-November that you said, okay, I'm going to switch to ChopLocal, partly for that shipping thing. But I think also, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know you'd seen the webinars. You'd talked to us by that point. We're a small team. We really like to get to know our vendors. And I think that that was something that you mentioned that was appealing. So you agreed that you were going to switch to ChopLocal, but that meant we needed to rebuild your website and set up your online store. And I remember you saying, okay, we have this opportunity. I know we had said, you know, we had a goal of a few weeks out, but we have this opportunity to be in an ad for the NFR National Finals Rodeo in Vegas. And I think that's like December 7th-ish, like the first week of December.
The first or the 7th, yeah.
And you said, is there any way we can get the new store, the new website up in that time? And we had a couple weeks and it was over Thanksgiving. And I remember being like, yeah, we can. But this is what we always tell people, is it partly depends on how fast you get us the information. But luckily that was pretty seamless. We got it done. It's the fastest one we've ever done under the time crunch, but we did it.
And you still like me.
Yeah, we still like you. Yeah, no, of course. Okay, going back a little bit. So one of the things that we see with farms and butcher shops, or farms, I guess, that we work with across the country, is that a lot of them start at farmers markets to build their customer base. But that was not the case with you. You added the farmers markets in later. So what do you think helped you build your customer base before you started doing the farmers markets?
I think is the blessing of COVID, right? How many people talk about the blessing of COVID, and people were just in such a panic and such a fear. I don't know. Other than God's hand on it, I don't really know. It just kind of put my foot in the door. And even in 21, I just really took a back seat. I mean, I was so exhausted.
Yeah, because you mentioned Ethan was a baby, but then you've got the girls, Hayden and Hannah, and you homeschool. I assume you were homeschooling them at that time too. So.
Right, homeschooling, and then I do all the managing, you know, bookkeeping for our different businesses, and yeah, I don't know. And to be honest about the farmers markets, I was totally intimidated by them. I'm like, I don't think I really, I don't know. I talked myself out of it for a long time, and then I had gone to another conference, a meeting, farmers meeting, and I met a lady there who's now my friend, Julia. She lives in Illinois, and she showed me her beef wagon and the farm, you know, how she set it up. And I was like, oh, I could do that. You know, I don't know. Sometimes somebody you just got to see somebody else doing it. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. This year, 2024, as we're wrapping up the year, it's my highest sales to date. And I'm just so humbled. And I'm like, why did I drag my feet on these farmers markets? Because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
Especially because you drive so far to them.
Right. Yeah. I don't have a 30-minute drive. Yeah. My closest is Sierra Vista. It's about two to the market. And I started going to there twice a month. And I thought, well, we'll see. Sierra Vista is not a big town, but they only have one market. It's on a Thursday. It's kind of during the middle of the work week, you know, and I'm like, well, we'll try to go twice a month and see what happens in it. My sales have not slowed down at all.
And unlike many areas of the country, it's year round, right?
It's year round. Yeah. Yeah. Our slow time is definitely the summer when it gets hot. But like right now, the weather's beautiful. We get a lot of snowbirds. Yeah. Right now, a lot of people aren't selling, you know, farmers markets where it's really cold in here. It's just when it's really, really hopping and really busy. So it's definitely my busier season as far as the farmers markets and sales.
Interesting. Okay, so a couple questions about farmers markets. One is, tell us about your setup, your beef wagon. You said you have three freezers in it, right? It's got your logo on the side and a family picture, I think you said, which, on a side note, you had a photographer come out to the farm probably a couple of years ago now and have beautiful photos of your family that I know we use on your website and you've used over and over. This is a tip that everybody listening can walk away with, is that if you bring a photographer out to your farm, get those professional farm photos of your family. It is so worth it because you will use those photos over and over. Okay. But anyway, you've got your beef wagon. You drive it 2.5 hours. It's stocked full of pre-orders, but also products there, or, you know, that you can sell on the spot there. How do you set up your booth? One of the things that we get questions about is, or I see questions about, is, do you let people kind of look through the coolers and pick out their own cuts, or do you have a list of the cuts that are available with the prices? Walk us through what all of that looks like.
The answer is yes to both of those. So when I met my friend Julia, she lets people walk through. She sells beef and pork. So she's got two freezers set up. They come in, they walk through, and then they, you know, she checks them out and they walk out. The trailer that I bought doesn't have like a, I guess they call it a butterfly door, where it's got that ramp, so it's easy to walk in. You got to step up into it. So we changed our setup a little bit. So we'll back in, and then we'll put our like 10 by 10 tent that you see at these markets. We'll set that up, set up a table. And so we give people options that will bring them the beef to look at or to buy. And then some people, it's like, well, do you want to come in and shop? So we actually do both. We have both options. And so when I started, I had one freezer, and then I got a second freezer, and now I got three. So it's kind of tight in there. You can't eat a lot of people in there, especially during the busy time. But we set up a table, we invite people under our tent to come in, and we've got kind of the menu, what's on the freezer today. And then I've got some chalkboard signs that I set outside. And every single market I go to, I have some kind of special, and I name it, like, you know, during Christmas, the cowboy Christmas box or the chuck wagon, something kind of ranchy, kind of punchy. People love it. And then I try to pick, like right now I got tons of short ribs, whatever I get backed up on, I put that as part of the special. And then I don't know if, I think it was last year, Jason's like, I think if people spend $100, give them a free roast. Cause I was like, just had tons of roasts. And then I'm like, now I'm like, you get a package of short ribs, you know, just whatever. But it's amazing how many people will work to get to that $100 to get something free.
We do the same thing on Chop Local. We know like what our average order value is. And then we know we want to push it. Like we can push people just a little bit higher if we, you know, offer them an incentive. And so, yeah.
Yes.
I love that you do the different specials at every market. Do you give a discount on those, or is it more like you're just really promoting them harder, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Sometimes it's a little bit more and people buy it and they, you know, and then sometimes there's a discount. I don't know. It just, I know rhyme or reason, but
no, we have another vendor that does a weekly special, and it's very rarely discounted. And people don't seem, you know, it's a bundle of different products, and people don't seem to take the time to add it up and see if it's going to be a discount or not. So,
yeah. And everybody's in a hurry. And so they want to see, oh, yeah, I like this, this, and that. I'll choose that. You know, if you just make it easy for people to choose, they actually will pay more because they don't have to pick and choose. So, yeah, it's the psychology of selling at farmers markets is fun. I've learned a lot.
So are there other meat vendors at your farmers markets?
There are. But I get asked a lot. People assume that you show up at a farmers market that you're grass-fed and organic. Like, no, we're certified natural. We raise American Wagyu, and yes, they're getting grain. It's not 90% grain. You know, our ration is still very forage-based, strong on the alfalfa and the oat haze, grass haze that we grow with some corn and barley and cottonseed. But there are other beef vendors there as well.
And are your products, I assume if people want to look through the freezers, they're vacuum, are the products vacuum packed so they can see the marbling, they can see what kind of meat that they're getting in there?
Correct. Even the ground beef is vacuum sealed. So, and honestly, this blows me away, but the last 2 months, maybe 3 months, one of my top sellers has been ground beef. And I'm like, once people get a taste, and a lot of times people come, they're like, oh, I'm not really sure. Like, here, we'll take a ground beef with you and try it. And I am selling out of ground beef. My mind's just blown. Like, usually that's something you get backed up on. So yeah, we're like, try the ground beef. You'll taste the difference. And people come up and they're like, is there really a difference with the Wagyu? And I'm like, I am not joking, but here, try for yourself, And we sell it for $6 a pound, so it's not a huge expense just to hand it out. But I'd say 99% of the time people come back and I'm selling out of ground beef, so I guess it's working.
Do you have any idea? Is your ground beef like 80-20, 90-10? Do you kind of have an idea of what it?
Yeah, I like to keep it at 85-15. So the only thing we don't do is butcher our beef. And so we've started working with a new processor. And so they're adding fat back to it. It's constantly like, please don't do that. So if I have found that my customers really like it at 85-15, maybe 80-20, but that's where I try to keep it. And then when you show them a package and they can actually see it, that is a selling point. They have to be able to see that meat. It's more expensive, but it sells you more beef.
You have any issues with the vacuum packing seals breaking, especially if your people are looking in the freezer, that type of thing?
Yeah, especially with your roast, prime rib. I try not to let too many people handle the roast. Mostly they're looking at the steaks. They do. Our new processor uses a heavier, like a 4 mil package plastic. And so those seals hold pretty tight, but they're not fail proof. So my girls are fine with it because they go through and find the steaks that are broken seal because that's when we eat steaks. Oh, look, this broke. And I'm like, as long as you're not breaking it, that's fine. Yeah. But yeah, we do a little bit, but since I switched to this new processor, a lot less of packages breaking, seals breaking.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, we get that question a lot too. Like, should it be vacuum packed? Should it be brown paper wrapped or white paper wrapped? And honestly, we find that there's pros and cons to both. I think in your situation, with that highly marbled product that is differentiated from what people in your area are selling or at the farmers market, it makes sense for them to be able to see that marbling in that steak, that's really important. So.
Yeah. And if you are going to the farmers market and people, they want to see your product. And so if you're selling individuals or, like before, it's just doing delivery. So it wasn't a huge deal. But if you're trying to present to sell at the market, that then being able to see it, and I want to see it too, because when I get a beef back from a butcher, like I know what my beef should look like too. So I've got to be able to see. And also for me to say, to go back and say, oh, I don't like this one. Who's this mama? Like what cow produced this one? Because it's the genetics of her now, not the bull. And so that's also making decisions on cull and some cows too, that I'm not happy with their final genetics in the marbling of the beef.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's see. We've talked about a lot of different things here. We talked about your farmers market booth. And is there anything else special that you do at the farmers market to really draw people into your booth, or has that not necessarily been an issue for you?
Oh, yeah, they're called Hayden, Hannah, and Ethan. They're my kids. People come for the kids. Sometimes they can't be with us, and everyone's like, where are your girls? Or where's Ethan? It's been phenomenal for my kids. And of course, I homeschool. Hayden's 14 and a half, and Hannah's going to turn 13 here in a couple months. In December, we were at the farmers markets, and I just stood back and visited with customers and the girls. They took orders, they sold beef, they answered questions. And people love it. They absolutely love interacting with all three of the kids, but especially Ethan just turned 5, so he's mostly playing in the dirt. But the girls,
Yeah, he's there to be cute, but yeah, the girls are working.
they are working, and they work hard, and they're my secret sauce for sure. And then and for this upcoming year, I keep getting asked over and over, do you have beef tallow? Beef tallow? And I'm like, well, I've got the kidney fat. You can make your own tallow. So I just got my food handler's license and my cottage house license so I can sell I'm going to start rendering it and making the tallow myself. And then I also purchased a freeze dryer, and I'm actually going to start making pet treats out of liver and heart, some of the stuff that doesn't sell, and then even some stew meat or packages that the seal does break and I need to use it. I'm just going to chop it up and freeze dry it and sell it as dog treats. And so just utilize everything I have. So we'll see how that goes.
I think that is so smart. We are seeing that as a huge trend. The tallow and tallow products are just so popular right now. We have several vendors on Shop Local that are selling those already, and it's been very popular. We're also seeing there are some people with an increased demand for just the fat itself because they want to render it themselves. And then I love the idea of the dog treats too. And yeah. So these value added products, I know that you have some other, like, was it a sweet Italian beef sausage? Like,
yeah, I've got sausages. Yes. And jerky and beef sticks and brats. Yeah.
Now those cost more to get processed, right? Do you have to go to a different processor though? Or is it your same processor that does that?
No, the beef sausages, that's all that my USDA processor. And then the jerky, the beef snack sticks, and the bratwurst, they're actually a different processor. They do like my wholes and halves, but for whatever reason, they're Arizona State inspected, but they can do retail cuts. And so the other kind of cool thing too is that they put the price on the bag for me, and then I just put my label. And so like they've got my jerky at $54 a pound. And so it's kind of already priced, ready to go. And those are selling. People love them. I ran out of snack sticks, and then I had so many orders for wholes and halves that I couldn't get one in for myself. So it's about 6 weeks I didn't have any. And then it kind of helps you with your roasts and your ground beef, some of the stuff that's harder to sell.
That's what I was going to ask, is if that's what's kind of helping you stay on top of your ground beef supply that way.
I think so. I think that is definitely part of it. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I have to back off of that a little bit because I'm running out of ground beef a little bit too quickly. But yeah, no, those are great products that I'm able to get a hold of. And those are really catching on and taking off as well.
Now your ground beef, you mentioned you sell for $6 a pound, which I think is relatively inexpensive compared to a lot of the ground beef that I've seen selling through Chop Local or direct from farmers. Now, your steaks and other cuts, are those kind of on par pricing-wise, or are those a little bit higher than, you know, being Wagyu, or kind of what's been your pricing strategy, I guess?
It's funny because you go to the farmers markets and you get like, we get this a lot, like, oh, thank you. Your prices are so reasonable. We appreciate that so much, you know, and then you occasionally get the one like, well, I can buy this cheaper at the store, like, okay, go ahead. You know, you're free to do whatever you want to do. And we actually this year we've been increasing on our prices slowly to see, especially things that are selling out, like all your premium steaks. So I've just kind of been inching my prices up, and I think I am going to make a jump even on my ground beef this year and see what happens. And I mean, prices are going to skyrocket in the store, I anticipate, with the historical high prices of cattle right now. Somebody's got to pay for that, and that's usually the consumer. So I just, for pricing wise, what I do is I kind of watch the grocery store, local stores. I watch online and just kind of fit it where I think it's going to fit, you know. And if stuff is selling too quickly, then I just kind of slowly inch up my prices a little bit. But it doesn't seem to slow people down because my prices are higher on my Chop Local, and I'll go to a farmer's market at a minimum, usually with $500, but usually it's $1,000, $1,500, sometimes $2,000 of product already sold, you know? So when I show up, people are coming to the market to pick up, and that's a huge thing, you know, cause I'm driving. So
you know, it's going to be worth your time that way. It's not like you're going to go and the weather's going to be crummy and attendance is going to be down and you don't know if you're going to make back, you know, anything. So you've already got that pre-sold.
Right. Yeah. Was it even worth the drive?
Yeah. No, that's awesome to hear. Okay. So let's talk about marketing a little bit. So social media is where you started, and that's primarily what you're doing now. I know you thought about email marketing, or you've dabbled in it, but you're not doing any email marketing, right?
Yeah.
So social media, I know. I was looking before we got on here. You have Facebook and Instagram. Do you use any other channels or those two?
Just those two channels.
Okay. And it looked like you have a lot more Facebook followers than Instagram followers.
I do.
Yeah. So do you get more engagement on Facebook? Do you feel like that's been...
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you... I'm curious because based on like when you got married and things like that, I think we're about the same age. Are you more of a Facebook user yourself than you are?
Yeah.
Yeah. So am I. Like, I don't know what it is, but I just like... I open up Facebook instead of Instagram a lot of the time, which is why really excited to introduce our new marketing specialist that's starting. She is a little bit younger generation than you and I, and I think she's a native Instagram and TikTok user versus Facebook. And so that's kind of exciting for us to balance our skill set, I guess, that way. So, but you post to both platforms and you typically post the same thing to both platforms. So do you go into Facebook to post and just have it automatically share to Instagram, or how?
I actually do it the opposite. I post it on Instagram and have it do it to Facebook, which is, I do. I have a way more followers on Facebook. I'm kind of new to Instagram. And yeah, I'm kind of like, I guess it's just whatever you get started with. I'm like, I just can't even hardly read Instagram. I'm just so confused.
Yeah.
Everything. I feel like Facebook, you get more information when you actually look at the post, you know, even if you're just glancing at it. But yeah, I love that I can just do one post on Instagram and it'll click over to Facebook.
Yeah. And that seems to be working pretty well for you. So we use Meta Business Suite to post, but I always use Square Photos or have it cropped to Square so that it looks nice on Instagram. And then that goes on to Facebook really nicely too, which look the same. Since you're doing it Instagram to Facebook, it's cropping it Square for you in there too.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's really been one of the main ways that you've built up kind of your following.
It is. It is. And then the beauty of going to the farmers markets, and then you start to meet people face to face. And really, I think that's just what people want. They don't necessarily want grass-fed, organic, all this stuff. They just want to see the people behind their food that they're eating. But word of mouth is growing. Like, I just talked to a lady yesterday. She bought a quarter of a beef. And so I called her on the phone. And she's like, you come highly recommended. She's never even tried our beef. And she bought a quarter. So
she bought an entire quarter. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm starting to get that more and more. Or people will show up at the farmers markets. And like, my friend told me how to show up and come find you. Yeah. It's been so much fun. But yeah, I by no means am I any kind of Facebook, Instagram. Actually, if I didn't have to sell beef, I would not even be on those platforms. But it's been a great way for me to market. And I just, it's all been, well, I'll try this, you know, and I don't have a clue what I'm doing. I just do. And they love to see pictures of the farm, the kids, the dogs, the whatever, you know, they just want to feel it's just inviting people into your story. And that's one of the biggest things we've learned, especially over the last, let's say, 4 years, where we've really got into the direct to consumer, is just allowing people to come in, invite them into your story, you know, and people are so curious. And, you know, like with us, Hayden and Hannah are both adopted and they're African American. So we kind of stick out anyway. So we clearly already have a story to tell and people are interested in that. And even at the last farmers market, we got to talking about adoption and there were two guys in line that are like, and they're both like, we're adopted too, you know? And so it's just more than selling meat. It's just connecting with people that people want so, so badly.
Yeah. I love that. We see the same thing on Chop Local. There are people who certainly want something specific, like grass finished or certified organic meats, so hard to find. But, you know, they want grass finished or they want free range chicken or something. But a lot of them, we found, just want the comfort of knowing who raised it and the fact that they can get all the information about how it was raised if they wanted to. They don't necessarily have those specific questions or specific requirements. They just want to know that they're supporting, directly supporting a farmer and build that relationship. And the other thing that I wanted to say about your social media is something that we coach farmers on. You do such a great job of showing behind the scenes on your farm, which those photos of the kids and their faces are just huge. Even psychologically, I think, to just build that connection with somebody when you can see their face. That's why we're recording video here. So if you're listening to this, you can come and see this on YouTube and see Candace's face and my face. But then you also mix in, here's where we're going to be at the farmer's market. And you mentioned short ribs, that you have a lot of short ribs right now. And I noticed on your social media, you've highlighted short ribs a couple times recently. As an innocent bystander, if you will, I thought that that was just, you know, sort of an accident, or that you're just really into short ribs. But now after talking with you, I know that that was totally deliberate because you need to sell short ribs, right?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, you post some recipes, and then like during December, I had a really beautiful short rib recipe. I had posted on social media, but then I also took the recipe so people could take it with short ribs, you know, and then we were giving away short ribs and they were my special. We make dog treats out of short ribs.
It's time to use them up. But I just love, I know that some people feel intimidated by social media because they think that they just have to sell the entire time. And you do such a great job, like I said, of showing behind the scenes, but you're still tying in, here's where you get the beef from these girls. Here's the link to go and order, put your pre-orders in, and you make it so easy for people that way, instead of, so that they don't have to message you back and forth 6 times to place their pre-order, right?
And I think I do that because I want to make it easier on me, right? Like, I just want to put it out there. Here it is. You don't have to ask me any questions because, you know, we all have tons of demands on us. You know, this isn't usually our only job, our only thing we do. And so, yeah, just make it easier for a customer. They're busy too. They don't have to reach out. And then it's just less touches that I have to make of answering the same questions over and over again. So probably, yeah, maybe it's a lazy thing on my end, but... It works.
No, it makes it easier for both parties, I think. And I think that that's really important to, you know, when you have the right tools, the right technology in place, like, it makes it easier for your customers and it makes it easier on you to have all of those orders in one location instead of, you know, taking those messages all over the place. So, well, this has been so good to talk to you. I know with us being in Iowa, you being down there in the Southwest, we don't get to meet our CHOP local vendors very often, but you and Sydney from our team went to a conference in Albuquerque and you got to meet her recently. And she said that she really, really enjoyed talking with you and Jason. So thank you.
What a pleasure. And you had touched on the beginning, the previous company I worked with was a corporation, and you know, you kind of get lost in numbers. And I tell people also too, on bookkeeping software, I left a big corporation and went with a startup, and they've been to my farm. They know me by name. And that's how I felt switching over to CHOP Local. You know, it's Katie and Sydney. And now we've talked like this several times, but actually to sit down and eat dinner with Sydney and get to speak with her and just get to know her on a personal level. It's been phenomenal. I've enjoyed it completely. And also, we didn't talk about, but the shipping part.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would say probably 80% of my orders through CHOP Local have been shipping. I ship to Phoenix, which Phoenix is a good 4 hours with nasty traffic. So it's not a place I'm going to show up for a farmer's market. I ship quite a bit into Tucson and then San Diego for whatever reason.
Yeah, I was going to say Southern California seems like they are getting you.
Yeah, super, super popular in Southern California. It's got to be that price point. I know I'm way out doing Southern California prices, but it's been easy.
Yeah, and I think you are different in that you have the grain finished product too. And there are people that want grass finished, but there are people that want that highly marbled, the Wagyu grain finished product as well. So
they do. And some people are like, are you grass finished? Like, and I'll say no. I'm like, okay, good. I'm like, oh, okay.
yeah.
But yeah, like even right before Thanksgiving, I had 4 beeves delivered to me frozen, you know, packaged, ready to go. And then I didn't hit my first farmer's market until December 12th. So I got it in, I'm looking at my calendar. I got it in on November 25th, and December 12th was my first farmer's market. And Hayden, my oldest, and I went to load the beef wagon. I'm like, where's all my steaks? Where's all my ground beef? And I kind of panicked, like, did I not get all my beef back? Because four is a lot. That's a lot of meat. And I got to looking back and I'm like, I have shipped that much beef in 2 weeks. I was unaware. And so, yeah, I'm shipping usually once a week, several boxes at least. So that's been new for me in 2024 because of Chop Local and switching over. But I've reached more people too, you know, with the shipping that can't come to a farmer's market or in California or Phoenix. And I don't know how they find me, but they do. So that's been a very positive thing, and a new thing in 24 is the shipping beef.
Okay, my dog wants in on the action here, so I apologize. But there was one thing I wanted to touch on shipping. When you first started, you know, we talk a lot about using the ice blankets and not dry ice. And I know you were pretty hesitant to ship without dry ice being in the Southwest, but you're using the ice blankets. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah. I can't even find dry ice, honestly. I hear my remote location. And so, yeah, the shipping blankets have been good. There's a learning curve with shipping, especially in the summer. So I've learned a lot this year, but yeah. And the other thing is I've never bought a shipping box. People give me their insulated shipping box, again, from the feed store, from the vet, from random people, you know, in my local community. And again, I say, I've got one gal, she collects all sorts of shipping boxes for me. And every once in a while, I'll give her 10 pounds of ground beef. You know, I mean, she's doing all this legwork for me. And so I pay her in some ground beef, and that has worked well. It keeps my shipping costs low. It keeps, you know, keeps the cost low for my customers too, because you're not having to buy that material, which is expensive.
Yeah, I love that.
But that's something I learned on Chop Local. I did learn that at Chop Local University for sure.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Candace, for your time. If people want to check out your website and your social media, they can look up White Barn Beef or White Barn Wagyu. They can see those pictures of your cute kids and see kind of what you're doing on social media, like you said, to share that story and build that connection with customers. And like I said, I really appreciate your time. Love working with you. And I'm so thankful that you were willing to be one of our first guests here.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for inviting me. And yes, so happy with my decision to choose Chop Local, and looking forward to 2025.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Meat Success. We hope this episode gave you fresh insights and inspiration to beef up your meat marketing. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social, and share with your fellow farmers and butchers. Have questions or ideas for future podcasts? Reach out to choplocaluniversity.com. Until next time, remember, there's more than one recipe for meat success.